outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain. The God Chain. The God Chain.
I attended my first meeting last night.
What? Your first meeting?
My first meeting where, in introducing myself, I had to say my personal, my preferred personal pronouns.
Oh, that's just goofy, dude.
Just
goofy. Where was that?
You know, it's not goofy to some people, because everybody else there took it seriously.
Okay, I'm sorry. I should. I'm glad I wasn't at that meeting.
And everybody there was exactly what they looked like. He, him, he, her, she, her. Everybody except one person who looked female, but was a they, them.
They, them.
They, them.
Multiple people on the bus?
Is
that what they were confessing?
That's, of all the ones they do, that confuses me the
most. We are
Legion?
Yeah. I mean, what is that? They, them?
Well, sometimes.
What does that mean?
Well, one guy that I talked to who wanted to be identified as they, them, this was not last night, but it's sometimes I want to be he, him, and sometimes I want to be she, her, and so I'd say they. And I just saw.
How are you supposed to know that unless they're wearing a t-shirt that says that?
Well, we had name tags on that set. So, yeah, that's how you find out. You introduce yourself so everybody knows. And somebody referred to her as her at one point, and she goes, it's they, them. And then everybody was like, oh, that's great. You corrected her. And isn't that great that we can all just learn together how to do this? And I'm sitting there going, what am I doing in this meeting? That was delightful to people in the meeting, however. But that's beyond goofy for me. I can't get my head around
Thank
that.
Thank you. I'm glad you said that because I don't understand it. I really don't. And I just ended up going, why is our whole culture kowtowing or being bullied into needing to kowtow to what seems to me confusion?
I don't know that it's being bullied. I think it's being presented, at least in the better sense, as compassion for people who are non-gender binary.
Okay, but I don't understand that.
But when you got 20 people in a room who really care about this, and there's only one exception to the norm,
right,
in that room, and you're going, this is a lot of work for a person that couldn't just go along with whatever. You know, that's what I do. If I'm a minority in a room full of people.
Right.
Of course, I'm a white male. I'm in the majority almost all the time.
Yeah, but you dethrone self for the sake of the value of the group.
But yeah, I wouldn't make a whole group make an exceptional. But this is a group that buys into that value. It's a whole social justice thing. And I just wanted to be with them to see what they were up to last night.
I don't get their newsletter.
I don't know that I'll be there again, but I'm kind of passionate about some of the values they're for, which is more on the racial side of things. It's for racial justice.
That's cool.
And inviting white people to speak up more freely in terms of justice racially. So that's why I went. But it's...
So what do we, I mean, honestly, what do we do with that? Because it does seem like there's a real, almost ridiculous measure of confusion. And I don't want to belittle people, but I just end up going like, okay, simple biology... We all came from two genders, and we don't have science that even demonstrates the capacity to do anything otherwise. And so when a culture is now saying, oh, but in order, in the name of kindness and compassion, let's all just use just whatever we want. And so it's no longer based in fact or reality. How is that helpful to a culture?
I don't know if it's helpful to the culture. I think it's helpful to those people who just feel like that pronoun puts them into an image they don't want to carry for themselves, I guess. I don't know how to speak for them entirely. As a writer, I would love – the New York Times had an editorial recently. Why don't we drop he, him, and she, her –
How do you write?
And just go to they, them. Because a lot of times you say – so a person does this, and when I grew up, it was always someone, and then you go to his. And everybody knows that that's both. But now it's not true anymore. So when you talk about someone does this, and you got him or her later in the sentence, and you say, if we just go to they, everybody's they. And I'm going, as a writer, I would love that. I would. But as a person, using a plural, something I've been raised with as a plural, and use it in a singular sense, is just brutal. I don't know how to do it. Particularly for people who are like gender fluid, because I heard a very liberal scientist on a show recently say, scientifically, the same people are going to defend climate change based on the science, blah, blah, blah. But they say, according to science, there are two genders. And it's determined by biology. You're either male or female biologically. Now, gender-wise in your head, there might be disparate. There might be different things that people struggle with. And boy, this person got booed down because they're just saying scientifically, and they're as liberal as they can be. Scientifically, there's right. only two genders. There's his.
Yeah, that's but not now a controversial statement.
Now there's 72 different gender identifiers in the culture. Yeah, and not gender, gender identifiers.
But
that people recognize, and it just
I'm a cosmonaut from Mars because I just feel it.
This is the other thing that makes me excited about getting old.
To have an opinion just because
no, it's just society's just.
It's
ever stranger,
off the cliff,
ever
man.
Stranger. Yeah, I mean, just and I get compassion to people. If I was with that woman and she was over my house for dinner and she said, "Could you refer to me as they, them?" I would just because you want me to and I can do that. And then, but the larger societal implications of
how is that a good thing?
I don't know.
I don't think it is.
A lot of people have decided it is,
but a lot of people could decide that the Earth is flat. And I'm not sure that would be helpful.
It's not carrying the day, though. There's a few people that are just not carrying the day.
Yeah.
The other is carrying the day.
I just again, this need, this lust for self-validation, and I just feel this. It's kind of like, look, for as much as I love feelings, I love them also to be attached to and calibrated to God's declared reality.
Yeah.
And that's, I think when you throw that out and you're no longer wondering, gosh, in humility, is what I think actually connected to what is? I think when you stop wondering that and you stop having the humility to ask that, I think you're in for a world of hurt.
But we are white, heterosexual males.
But that doesn't change what I just said.
It does. It does change the fact that how are we going to have insight into what those people are struggling with? Because I fit into the majority culture just fine. I do, in every way you could fit into it. So when other people who...
Yeah, but being a white privileged male is a hunted class
now, don't say, get cynical on me. I didn't say anybody was privileged here. I just said we represent a point of view that other people are going to say, I don't have your experience. I've never had to stake my... For instance, I've never had to stake my identity on my sexuality to survive. I don't go through life as a heterosexual male. I don't think about it during the day in terms of I'm heterosexual and that's my identity. I don't. I'm a guy who likes to write, who likes to engage people. I have friendships of all kinds with people. I don't navigate life as a heterosexual male.
No. I navigate certain arenas of life where that actually makes you a minority.
Okay, well, you're in a lot of different places than I am.
And the point is what? In terms of the fact that you and I are in the majority?
No, I just don't know what that other person deals with. It's one thing for you and I to sit here and talk about this from coming from our experience, and be another to have someone in here that would say, here's why that's important to me, and I would love to hear what that is.
I would too. I think the challenge for me just in thinking beyond the categorizing of stuff, and it's like, you know, am I ever not a white male? I don't know. I don't wake up going like, I'm a white male.
No, because you don't have to. That's the point.
Okay.
You don't have to. Like the guy you met for lunch, being a black man, helping some guy laying on the ground, and he has to respond to that, hands out in the open when the cops arrive because
I get that.
He's different than you. He's got different
I get that, and that was a helpful moment of going like, oh, wow, I don't have his same experience, and I do get that. I'm not invalidating that. But when I come from in essence, a persecuted class, a persecuted lens, or I'm looking through my hurt or whatever that is that's making it go like, wait a minute, I'm not just here as a person. I'm now here as a subclass of whatever I'm looking through. I do wonder going like, okay, the potential for bias and not seeing it clearly is just as profound for that person as it is for the person that's not aware of the filter they're looking through. I'm still going like, there is truth out there as God sees it. And I'm wanting to go like, what's it look like for that?
But are you wanting to impose that truth with a capital T on people who aren't ready to see it yet?
I don't know that I'm.
That's the other question.
Because
I'm willing to help people discover it from wherever they're starting. Yeah. They may be starting in the weeds of complete gender identity confusion, whatever. And I'm willing to start in the weeds with them. I am.
No, and I think that's wonderful. I don't know that I'm anywhere in my life trying to impose. I do feel like the fact that we're now up to 72 different genders, and we want to now
identifiers.
Not I'm
genders.
Confused.
Obviously,
I think the fact that we now have to have introductory meetings about our pronouns, I end up going like, that's an imposition of itself. And it's fine for the group that wants to do that.
Sure.
But when that gets projected onto culture and you have certain states, certain cities that are saying you screw up these pronouns, it's now going to be a crime. And yes, I'm going like, excuse me, what's happening here? I do end up going like, that's where the word impose is happening, regardless of whether I am compassionately buying into the desire to communicate and identify and relate to people with wherever they're at. Because I share the same compassion. I just don't know how that gets to – I don't know how that gets applied on our culture very well. Because, you know, when I look at what's happening in some of the schools and some of the curriculum and some of the stuff that's being put out, you're just kind of like, gosh, here's a hurt class that's looking for validation. And now they're wanting that to become part of the core curriculum that's imposed upon everybody as if it's normalized. And it's like just still a tiny fraction. I end up going, that's bringing confusion on a bunch of other people that I end up going, as a policy for our culture, that's not helpful.
And they wouldn't say hurt class. They would say just nonconforming. And I wouldn't defend on the other side of the argument. I'm not going to defend our world's view of masculinity or femininity. Or even the religious views of masculinity and femininity. I think that's been as twisted by the fall as everything else. So the macho male, whatever, and the female's got to be that project that image in the culture. I think that's what people are rebelling to. And I applaud some of that. I think our views of femininity and masculinity are incredibly twisted. That's not saying there aren't males and females. I'm just saying our views of those things. And then you have a boy growing up who doesn't fit into that male stereotype. Now, what confusion results and how does he deal with that? And you grew up in a locker room with other males.
Oh, totally.
You know what that's like. And so people get twisted. Now, they wouldn't say hurt. They would just say gender nonconforming. And do we make room for them in society? Now, in California now, you can have M, F, or X on your license, driver's license, in case you're just not gender conforming. And then it gets to be kind of silly as to why even have M, F, or X on the driver's license.
Yeah, I guess that's where I would end up landing out going like, what's – because I think if reality is as I want to determine it, that's where I would say regardless of where I'm starting or where someone else is starting, I don't think that's helpful. And I think all of us have the potential for mass bias. And very few of us have a big awareness of that. I mean, I look at myself going like, the heart's deceitfully wicked. The wicked part, I get. The I can deceive myself, that's the more dangerous part where you're just going like, Lord, I don't want to do that. I don't want to bow to that as a cultural, value. Let's just play nice, share our toys, and, so you can be whoever you want to be. I'm going like, okay. I do wonder, where is this going to lead and what fruit will it bear? Because I just question the value of it.
I hear you, but I just come down to, what does it mean to love? What does it mean to love the next person I'm with? And I know it doesn't have a lot of factors on society as a whole, but it does say for people who are non-conforming to majority standard stereotypes, ideals, and these people commit suicide in larger than normal percentages, what do we do to make some space for those people to be in our culture? And I don't think all of that's misguided. I just don't. But that's not what we want to talk about on this podcast.
There you go.
What do you think of all these ministers who are abandoning the faith of late? You been reading any of that stuff?
Yeah. And I end up just going like, wow, this to me is the tragic fruit of Jesus not being a person that I'm converted to.
Yeah, and the two I'm thinking of, I don't know who you're thinking of, Joshua Harris, who wrote a book on courtship. I mean, at 21, he's telling everybody how they should date and marry.
Yeah.
20 years later, he's divorced.
I did a series, I Kiss Dating Hello.
You're going to do that book, are you?
No, I did that. You did Kiss Dating Hello. I just kind of went, this is whacked.
Yeah, he wrote a book, and then he repudiated it. Now he's gotten divorced. Now he's left his faith, and he did an recent Instagram. So don't write me. Don't try to win me back. Don't tell me how sad this is. I've never been happier or more fulfilled in my life than now that I no longer consider myself a Christian.
Yeah. And self-validating.
And the other guy is Marty Sampson, a big worship music writer or whatever with Hillsong.
Yes.
He's announced his faith and said that, that nobody knows what's right and wrong and lost my faith, but I'm happier than I've ever been and it all sounds right to me and we're good to go. Man.
See, but isn't that sort of the same kind of these people are just now deciding to be non-conforming?
Well, they're non-conforming with a minority. As Christianity becomes more and more a minority point of view,
no, I know,
particularly the religious.
But isn't that sort of the same? I'm just looking at the through line of what we were looking at, talking about, and I go like, it has some same similarities here. It's like you just now decided, nope, I'm done with this. I don't feel the same thing for this. I don't think there's reality there, so I'm just going to jettison it all. And I end up going like, okay, I wonder what reality ever was.
For them.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I think if you get to know the Jesus of Scripture as a living reality in your life, I don't know how you walk away from that.
I know.
When you look at Joshua Harris, who grew up in this, you know,
principles conformed reality.
Ultra Calvinist kind of sovereign grace deal. And there's all kinds of allegations of sexual abuse going on with kids and whatever in that congregation, lawsuits. This thing's been a mess. And his journey takes him to the disillusionment of
that mess,
that religion, and that mess. Now, to him, that religion was his faith. So leaving the religion, he leaves his faith.
Right.
And that's where I think the terms are pretty bad. So two things that bother me. One, I don't know that you ever tasted what faith was. I don't know that. And number two, you seem to have a need to tell everybody else how to live their life. You want to tell people how to court 20 years ago.
You did that before. Now you're
And your life moves toward chaos. And so now you want to abandon it. And now you want to share that too and how fulfilled and happy you are. And I'm saying that at the same time I'm thinking about a pastor who wrote me one day when I said, you know, my worst days outside the system are still better than the best days I had inside of it. And he wrote me to say, how dare you say that kind of stuff, man? You know how hard you make it for the rest of us in here? And I'm going, yeah, I know. I probably shouldn't have said it, but it's true. So I question, you know, how much religion did you get and confused it with God? And then did that fail you? Congratulations. It's always going to fail you. What I'm sad about is how can you spend so long and invest so much of your life in something about Jesus and not come to know who he is? And I know people do it all over. It breaks my heart. That's why I mostly decry the religious systems we've created that lead people ultimately to that kind of disillusionment. It will fail you.
Yeah.
It will. I was with a group of former elders of Hillsong in Sydney, Australia a few years ago. Uh-huh. I remember being told some of this. We had a night in this person's home where I was hearing all the stuff going on behind the scenes of Hillsong, and it's authoritarian, exclusivity of leadership, disingenuous activity, celebrating of the wealthy. I mean, there's a whole lot that goes on behind the scenes that nobody, honestly, I mean, Hillsong's got this beautiful music that, you know, helps people get to know who God is. I mean, there's some wonderful Hillsong music that really touches the heart. So that's the bait. And what's behind it is...
It's terrible. Is that? Bait.
I'm sorry. But that bait has gone all over the world. And people just... The thoughts of Hillsong is, oh, this wonderful church that's spawning off...
Just pause for a second. Why do you call it bait?
Because it's the lure. It's the thing that makes people think Hillsong is a great thing.
Okay.
It's not just, hey, gosh, God gave somebody a neat song and this music's beautiful.
See, because I listen to their music and I don't end up going, oh, Hillsong. I don't think of them. I enjoy.
Right. I think you're rare. I think when you say Hillsong,
you think I'm rare?
I think most people, particularly in the music world, are going to know where the song comes from. And there's a whole, everybody wants to be on Hillsong's list. And
Unfortunately, I do get that.
The way they do their conference, the way they hire speakers, what the speakers demands, all the money that goes on behind the scenes of that thing. And I was with some people in New Zealand who were planting a Hillsong church who ran afoul of the home base leadership. And I only heard one side of this story, but I've heard this story a few billion times. Got completely lied to, robbed from in this whole authoritarian thing. So when I look at people like that, see, here's what I don't think people know. They think, oh gosh, these were people following Jesus, part of a great thing. And all of a sudden, maybe they're discovering something I ought to consider because I have a hard time with my own faith at times being disillusioned. And then they want to give up on it too. Instead of realizing, no, these people didn't come from healthy groups of people learning to follow Jesus together. Not saying there aren't people there who were following Jesus. I don't know that. But I'm saying the systems they were part of overall at the root was not healthy.
How would you describe faith or define faith? Like when someone says, oh, you know, I'm giving up my faith. What is faith? Because I feel like that's one of the most, unfortunately, misdefined perception things. I mean, as I'm trying to do some movies within Hollywood, most of the people I'm dealing with, their definition of faith is really whacked.
What is it?
It's nothing close to relationship. It is not a developed sense of trust. It's as if I'm going to believe something strong enough that it makes a difference and brings forth outcomes. That's how they
tend some people who see it that way.
They tend to see it as
the tool to manipulate God, if there is one.
I don't think they would be honest and say that. No, but it's sort of like it really is. It's a human work. It's like they marvel at the people that can live a long bit of life and not question their faith, as if questioning it's like really bad. I'm going like, isn't that normal? I sort of feel like this is a growing relationship of confidence. So I just ended up going, like, I think people got a bunch of whacked thoughts about what faith is.
Yeah, and I think Christianity is kind of also called the faith as just the reality.
Right.
You know, so the scripture about, you know, the faith once delivered to the saints or whatever. Right. And people talk about the Christian faith and exactly they mean religious institutions. That's exactly what they mean.
What when you, Wayne, looks at it, how do you communicate that to people? Because I don't hear you talking about the faith.
No, I don't. To me, faith, I've long ago not used the word faith internally. I may say it. But what I'm putting right on top of it is trust.
Yeah.
I think faith is trust.
I think I've bought into the same thing.
And trust is relational. There's no way that trust is just, I trust a doctrine or I trust an institution or I trust a religious leader.
I only trust a person. And that's in varying degrees according to who that is. And there's one person that has actually won me to the greatest dimension of that. Yeah. And that's Jesus.
Yeah.
And so I end up going like, that's one person I know who will have my best interests always at heart.
Yeah.
And I don't just confess that. I actually feel that.
Yeah.
Somehow I've been won to that place.
Yeah, I had a conversation the last few days about the prayer of faith. Someone diagnosed with a pretty serious disease and trying to figure out what the prayer of faith is. And as I'm hearing them talk about it, the idea of faith is, like you said, it's a work. I need to figure out what this prayer of faith is. And, you know,
they do it.
And they're going to do some kind of training thing on some new guy has, not new guy, but some guy has got a thing on commanding prayer that we can learn how to command stuff in prayer and it's going to happen. And already I'm shut down. Already my idea of the prayer of faith is, how do I pray inside my absolute trust that my whole life is in his hands? And that God wants to work in me and I want to cooperate with his work so that I don't separate the prayer of faith from the desperate thing I have to do to get rid of this disease I'm terrified of. But the prayer of faith is, how do I get inside my love for Jesus and my trust in him and then discern what he's doing and pray along those lines instead of trying to draw a theological conclusion that all diseases were meant to be healed. I've just got to find the right key to prayer so I can make this happen.
Yeah.
And that's how I see it. I can't talk about faith without immediately thinking of trust and trusting the relationship more than I trust the outcome I want.
Totally. And I don't know how to talk about faith without an active God who is speaking and clarifying for me what it is he desires in this situation.
Yeah, and nudging us to that reality.
Because I don't know how to take the principles and go like, okay, well, I'm just going to apply the principles, because I'm going like, I know enough to argue myself into a corner in a rigorous debate, and I could do both sides.
Right, right.
And so when that's true, I'm going like, wait a minute, trying to do this by my selective choice of the principles I prefer, that can leave me totally in the weeds.
And how do you get there? Hasn't it been, for me, it's been, there have been things I thought were absolutely certain that God wanted to do. And I've prayed with the intensity, the conviction. I've convinced myself. I have no doubt in my heart that God's, and it doesn't do it.
Yes.
And I've been down that road enough times to go, I am exhausted trying to get God to do the things I think he should do. And then faith just becoming the tool by which I seek to manipulate his actions. And now I just want to say, okay, God, I'm willing to go tooth and nail. I'll pray for 40 days. I'll fast. I'll do whatever. When I know you've got something you want to do and you're asking me to be involved with you, I'll do that.
That's where when it's voice led that I'm not just trying to declare, but it's like you sort of come to that confident conclusion over time because you go like, yeah, it is more other centered. This is not just my comforts and my preferences. This is sort of like I see him in this and that's his voice. That's what he's asking me to do. I find myself having great energy and capacity to do those things.
Yeah.
Which I think is the fruit of it actually being faith and being his directive. When I come up with my good idea and I then, you know, add to it the hamburger helper of the things I think justify that.
Yeah.
I always hit the wall and run out of gas, and rarely do those things turn out like I hoped.
And get my friends to agree with me. So we got two or three agreeing on the same thing. Yes, and we're all in my hamburger helper together.
I can convince a lot of people of a lot of things, and you just go like, okay, that's not helpful to the actual outcome. I need to have humility, and I need to not presume I know the outcomes and the answers here. I need to put that situation before the Lord and then go like, hey, this is what I see. What am I missing? What are you doing? Who's involved in this situation that has a sort of a declarative action that affects outcomes? Because I just end up going like, sometimes I'm concerned about something that really is not of my great concern. And I need to learn that. Other things that it's like, there's things that God does have for me. He does want me to do. And so it's like, it's not just me to sit there and go like, okay, well, Lord, you do it. It's like, no, there are things that sometimes he's asking me to do that he's not going to do. He's directing me to do. I need to learn what that is. And so I don't come at any of these situations anymore thinking, oh, I know what's going on here. The first thing I go like, Lord, what is going on here? And how do you help me understand that?
And letting him, whether it's a voice, as you say, or nudging over time, that as I explore this with him in prayer, in watching how the circumstance unfolds and getting a sense of where that movement is. To me, that's all like, you know, walking in a fog. You see bits of things.
And which is kind of the journey of faith.
It is a journey of faith. And I don't know why we've gotten so afraid of that. We want to have everything certain. I want to know if I pray this certain technique, I can command into existence thing, because that's what God's empowered us to do as his followers. And you got people out there trying to command their self into existence. And it's so deceptive, because it's really God just invited us to walk with me. I'll show you the way forward. I'll show you the way through this. Just come with, and like you said, when he's got something for you, and you really know there's this, man, I feel God's leading me to this. I've shared it with other people, not to enlist their support. I've shared it so they could honestly feed back. I think
they
could
discover, because if I convince someone that I'm right, I've robbed them of the confidence they will get in discerning it for themselves.
Yes. And I've even had this interview where I feel like God was leading me a certain way. And some of the best people around me were encouraging me not to go that way. And I get it. I know they really loved me. And it wasn't a vote. It's 9-1. At the end of the day, I listened to them going, I get it. I hear you, but I don't think you're right.
Agabus did that to Paul in the scriptures.
I'm going to go down this road. And if I'm wrong, I'm willing to pay the price for what that wrong means. I'm willing to.
Yeah.
And I've learned that way. I've learned how to follow him, which is not I'm any more certain today. I'm still going, I got things before God right now going, okay, this way you want me to go. I'm happy to do it.
Just because I followed God on the last thing and I was certain about it and it turned out great does not mean I have the same capacity on this present thing.
Yeah.
That's one I wish was different, but it's not. It's sort of like every day is new, which is why I'm glad the mercies are new every day too, because it's like I think we are peering through the dark, moving toward the light and clarity of what he's directing. And as I do that, I want to do the fruit check of, okay, how is this changing me? How am I doing it loving others? What's happening that would give me the encouragement? Yep, you're walking this out well. That's what I look for. I mean, it's like I don't have this unwavering, you know, never have. It's like, no, I got tons of questions.
Yep.
But I don't question his heart for me. That's you know, like when I, oh, you've never doubted your faith. Most of the time when people are, quote, doubting their faith, it really is kind of a semi-smear on the character of God, as if somehow he's not really good, or he's not real, or he's not, you know, who he's been made out to be.
Yeah, maybe he's not loving, he's just a mean old bully.
Yeah, and I'm going like, okay, I don't think those are tragic. I think those are to be discovered. I think those are great questions that would let you know, yeah, isn't there more of him to actually discover? Because it would be really hard for me at this moment to do an about face on who I think he is. I'm going like, no, I have actually tasted his profound love for me in a way that'd be hard for me to conclude he's changed.
Yeah, not only his profound love, I'd also say his incredible power to do whatever it is that he wants to do. The fog is, do I know what he wants to do? Or is Wayne projecting his own agenda, ambitions on the event?
Yes.
That's where the fog is. It's not, man, I know he loves me. It's not, I know he's got the power to do whatever he wants to do. But then is it just what Wayne best sees to do? That's what God sees too. God's the better projection of Wayne's self, which saying it that way, you just go, okay, well, that's absurd. Of course that's absurd.
I know, but that is where the fog is. And I think that part of the fog is, okay, when am I supposed to be resting and abiding as he is working?
Yep.
And then when have I been given a directive where he's now looking at me going like, your turn, and there is something for me to do? For me, that's where a lot of my fog is, where you're just going like, okay, I'm trying to discern realms of responsibility here, and I have I'm no longer the master of the universe. I'm no longer the codependent one that thinks it's all on my equation. But I also know that it's not in the fatalistic realm that if I'm not a part of the dance with him, it's just all going to happen. I just end up going like, I don't feel comfortable sitting down in any of those chairs.
Yeah, and here's where I think people find false hope. Somebody comes along with a new seminar. It's commanding prayer or whatever, biblical or supernatural ministry things. Whatever. Here are techniques you can learn, not a relationship you can have that leads you to God directing you. Here's the principles you can exploit. Because any seminar basically is about principles, right? You learn these principles, often divorced from relationships.
Sadly, that's the bulk of what I've heard.
Yeah, and if you can be convinced enough, then you can get this done. And if you're not convinced, then if it doesn't get done, it's because you don't believe enough. And the whole thing is
Wayne has his finger right pointed in my face.
It's so self-fulfilling. And I would, you know, I just want to sometimes scream from the housetops, don't go to anything that promises you a technique to get your prayers answered, because it's going to be self-based.
Yeah.
And what they're selling is a false hope, and desperate people fall for that. My brother with MS, my father-in-law with Parkinson's disease, I mean, medically and prayerfully, tried every new possibility, even if there's only a 0.1% chance it might help. And went to extreme things to try and find it. Because desperate people, man, if you've got a debilitating disease, you do want to find the answer.
Right.
And I just, it's, you're right for people who want to offer you false hope to prey on your finances. And that may not be, that may be better, best intention. They've gone through the Bible. They believe that these principles will work. The fact is they don't work.
What's the difference between the false hope that religion is peddling, and as you've described that, and the real hope that we can have?
For me, just to answer that off the cuff, I think false hope is always vested in the outcome I want.
Okay.
And real hope is vested in the person I know. And whether I'm healed or not, whether I'm healed of this disease or transformed through it so that he demonstrates himself through my weakness, he's the one I'm concerned about. My hope is in him. My hope's not in an outcome.
That's good.
Once the hope goes to an outcome, I've even, one of the language you sang a lot was, you know, somebody, the husband, leave a wife or whatever. We're believing God to bring him back. I talked that way all that, or believing for this healing, or believing for $1,000 by Friday morning or whatever. I don't even use that language anymore. And it creeps me a little bit when someone else does. Because if I'm believing God for something, I'm ultimately not believing him. I'm believing in the outcome. And God's the tool instead of, got to get this need.
Yeah, no, I
believe you to be gracious and kind and powerful. And now show me how it is that you want to walk through this with me.
I concur, because I just end up going like, you know, when I'm trusting for an outcome that tends to be a work where faith is now the force of confidence I can exert onto that situation. And I'm just going like, okay, well, have at it. As for me in my house, I don't think I got that muscle like that.
And it's no wonder to me that people give up on a faith built like that, because it doesn't work. There's enough stories you can kind of highlight to make it look like it's happening for other people.
You can give your testimonials of the moments and the places that it works, but I don't know that that was the explanation for why.
Yeah.
That
correlation's not causation.
Yeah, that's exactly. Where you just end up going like, no, wait a minute. It's like, that's wonderful. That's great. But I'm not sure that that's true in the big capital T sense of why all those things occurred. Because you just end up going like, I find my security in that hope that is found in the God I'm coming to know.
But we could teach that seminar, couldn't we? You take the miracles you and I have seen and been a part of and trace back to what we did before and begin to teach that as a tool to get what people want. We could teach that seminar.
Oh, yeah, in spades.
Right. And people would come to get it because, man, they want that more than anything. But I've never been able to do that. The miracles I've been a part of, I'll just go, man, God was amazing. And yeah, maybe I had an act of obedience. Maybe there was something I did. But then can I turn around and do that again in the next circumstance and make the same thing happen? See, I know better than that.
See, what's so amazing is I got so profoundly blessed or helped by looking at the life of John the Baptist and, you know, Jesus' commendation of him. Of those born among women, there's no one greater than John.
Yeah.
And you're like, says Jesus. I mean, that's a pretty amazing statement about a guy. And yet he largely is doing everything right that we're aware of, and his obedience and his fearless obedience lands him in jail with the sentence of going to get your head cut off because some little sexy teenager danced for the king.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, how's that fair? And he's sitting in jail going like, hey, are you the Messiah? And Jesus tells, you know, John's disciples, go tell them here, the blind see, lame walk. And it's like, what about the captives in the prison sense? Because I'm in that category right now. Are you that Messiah for me today?
You're going to get me out, right?
Yeah. It's like I get freed, right? And the whole phrase, blessed are you who keeps from stumbling over me. And you just go like, okay, somewhere in the midst of my journey, I got that story taught to me in a way that I went, oh my gosh. It is actually possible to do things right and to end up in a really in quotes, wrong outcome.
Yeah.
That isn't fair and isn't fun. And God has a wonderful commendation about who you are and what's happened. And it's just not the desired outcome.
So what's the stumbling over me mean?
That to me is where it's like, you know what? My little stone of stumbling just might be that outcome I'm hoping in. Because that was all of John's angst, is that, hey, I've done everything right. I shouldn't be in this moment. Right, Jesus?
Right. You're going to get me out of this.
Right, Jesus?
Yeah. And the stumbling, isn't it, when he doesn't do what we expect?
Yeah.
And then to go back to your accolade for John the Baptist, the finish of that verse is, he or she that's least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than John.
So what, but unpack that a little bit. What does that mean tangibly for people?
Yeah, to me it means the relationship you and I get to have with Jesus is better than anything the old covenant people could experience because it was outside. Ours is inside. Now, a lot of people like these guys who are quitting the faith, they've lost. They've been schooled in religion, and religion has failed them, and they're disillusioned. They've never been introduced or gotten out to learn how it is that I connect with the God who makes himself known to me so that I can have a journey with him rather than an experience with a Christian faith that's a lot of rules, most of which don't work to either set me free or to get me healed or to make me a better lover in the world.
Yeah.
And so we're better than John the Baptist, not because we're better people, but because we have a better access through the cross. Yeah. The presence of the Father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have the capacity for an indwelling fellowship through the Holy Spirit that's there on my insides. I mean, that's where I just end up like, that was the change in order.
Yeah.
And you just go like, okay, a wilderness with God is far better than the promised land without him. But I don't know that most people know that.
Yeah. And if you're going to settle for something less, you will. But I think we both say don't.
Yeah.
This is the faith that you'll never have to walk away from. It'll change your life.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.